This episode is brought to you by the Arvada Center, because they're kicking off their summer concert series in June. Relax under the stars at the Arvada Center's outdoor amphitheater and take in acts like Melissa Etheridge, Big Richard, Tower of Power, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, The Spin Doctors, and so much more. Concerts are scheduled for June through September. You can find a whole schedule of events and get your tickets today at arvadacenter.org. That's arvadacenter.org. Today on CityCast Denver. Denver, like the rest of the world, has Barbie fever. Bike lanes stir controversy because they're ugly, and Casa Bonita management responds to employees' unionizing efforts. Producer Paul Caroli joins me to break down all these stories, plus a listener's concern that downtown Denver isn't dead just because we say it is. Today is Tuesday, July 25th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about. Paul, did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, I did. I did, actually. I did Barbenheimer.
Ah, the Barbie-Oppenheimer double feature.
Yeah, normally we start the Tuesday show with a vibe check. I think it's pretty clear that was the vibe this weekend.
Bright I agree.
Pink everywhere.
It's been my dream. I haven't seen the movie. I haven't seen Barbie yet, so no spoilers.
Okay,
but
I won't.
What did you think?
They're both great. They're both great. But mostly, I mean, the Denver part is like, it's exciting that people were, just like every other city, it seems, super, super pumped, especially to see Barbie. I mean, people are talking about it as a pair, but if you know anything about the movie business, Barbie is like going to make three times as much money as Oppenheimer. It did already this weekend.
My Instagram feed was just like full of every kind of person, every age group that I'm friends with. Everyone was at Barbie and everyone was dressed up. So I love it. I love that Barbie's getting her due. As a person that was not really allowed to have Barbies as a kid, I went through my Barbie phase late. 16 to 26 was my Barbie time. My college
16 to 26?
Yeah, my college bedroom was head to toe Barbie. Everything. Barbie sheets, Barbie curtains, Barbie television, everything.
You
Barbie TV, VCR
when,
combo.
When you see it, we'll talk about it. I'd be interested to hear your take because it's very meta. It like addresses all ages of Barbie fandom.
I love it.
It's fun.
I love it. Okay. Well, you can tell us what you think about Barbie if you want. But what else are Denverites talking about this week? What was on your mind? What story really caught your attention?
Well, the one I'm watching is this controversy developing over the 7th Avenue bikeway.
Okay.
And what's happening is Dottie is finally installing a bikeway between Williams and Pennsylvania on 7th Avenue. So if you know 7th Avenue, it's a parkway. It's one of our historic boulevards. There's the stretch of green between the lane going one way and the lane going the other way. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. I'm just trying to picture like what neighborhoods it goes through because it's kind of like the edge. It's not really Capitol Hill.
Sort
but
of on the south part of Capitol Hill, Congress Park.
Congress Park. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
The controversy around this thing kind of, you know, blew up around May, late May. That's when a group of neighbors met in Little Cheeseman Park, May 31st. It was like, I've seen a picture in Westward. It was like dozens and dozens of neighbors. And they're all upset. They say they're not upset about the bike lanes themselves, which have been there for a few years, but these new bollards, which if you're not familiar with a bollard, you've probably seen one because there's a lot of them going up around the city. White, flexible poles, kind of like rods, like hip length. And if you put them in a line, they create a nice non-permanent but significant barrier between the bike lane and the car lane.
They kind of look like PVC pipe.
Yes. Like maybe a little bit wider, a little thicker, but yeah, PVC pipe.
I remember there was one in the middle of 11th. Oh gosh, what is it like? La Pan? It's right by West High School and it just got run over so much they took it out. Yeah, sucks. It was a cross. It was like denoting a crosswalk for pedestrians and cars were just not having it.
Huh.
Interesting. So you're saying that the bike lane itself maybe wasn't the initial issue. It's these, it's the structural part that they're putting in as a protective layer between cyclists and cars, right?
Yeah, it's this new level of infrastructure. And like, as for what people are getting upset about, I really don't know. I mean, this is a big group of angry neighbors. There's the things people say that they're upset about, and then there's the things that are actually upsetting them, and it's kind of hard to tell.
That's a good point.
But what people are saying is that it's these bollards. Like one longtime resident told Nine News, "We love the bike lanes, we love the bikers, we just don't want the beautification of our 7th Avenue taken over by white poles."
Well, beauty is subjective, right?
Yeah, I think I feel that way. I mean, I don't know if you're a longtime resident of this neighborhood, if you live there for 50 years and you're used to these certain intersections, maybe you're really attached to them. I don't know. What I feel like is...
It's really about that, though.
I don't think it's really about that. I mean, I think it's about neighbors not wanting change. I think them not wanting to give up any space. And I think that they're mad for reasons that are real, is what I want to say.
Like, okay.
And I think that what's getting lost here is that this is really a vision zero conversation. Like anytime you add infrastructure and improve safety conditions for cyclists or people using other modes of transportation, inherently you're making things a little bit more difficult for drivers. That's by design.
That's what Vision Zero is supposed to be all about, right? So Vision Zero is this plan put in place in 2016 by the city of Denver to eliminate traffic related deaths. So people hit by cars, cyclists hit by cars. And so what you're saying is like, okay, I mean, anytime the built environment changes, it changes how we feel. But this is really, it's that subtext about cars, kind of, to me. Is
what do
like,
you mean?
Well, like, what, isn't a line of cars parked along your block ugly too? No,
for some people,
we're used to it.
Some people
I don't know.
Definitely don't like that, but it's by design.
Right.
It's supposed to be slowing down cars. That's
sure.
The entire explicit purpose of this. A Dottie spokesperson says the goal is to lower vehicle volumes on that stretch so it's more comfortable and attractive for biking.
More comfortable and attractive for biking is interesting. I think more comfortable and I guess attractive in the sense attracting people to use that mode of transportation.
Yeah.
Okay. Because here we're talking about the attractiveness of a street. That is not what is happening.
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, they want to make it easier. They want to make it safer. They want to make it feel safer, which is another huge thing for cyclists. But yeah, I mean, infrastructure like this, like as a longtime biker, I can confirm it works.
It helps you.
It makes it more appealing.
Okay.
Makes me want to bike more often.
So I guess in the bigger picture of this conversation around the city and changing our streets, right? That's the big conversation with Vision Zero is how do we change our streets to make them more safer? Do you see this as like a microcosm of the larger issue?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, this is people who probably typically drive cars, these neighbors, not wanting to give up any space on their streets that would be making things easier and safer for bicyclists. And it's going to have a direct impact. Like any incremental improvement we have for cyclists, like these bollards, is going to mean fewer deaths at the end of the year when we start looking at how we did at Vision Zero.
I'll be curious to see how the Johnston administration addresses Vision Zero, honestly.
Me too. This is a good first test for them.
This episode is brought to you by Pine Melon, the farmer's market delivered. Pine Melon is a next generation grocery delivery app that partners with over 200 farmers, ranchers, and producers in Colorado to help make fresh, locally sourced foods available to the Denver community at fair prices. Get high quality meats, eggs, and dairy from small local farms, fresh baked breads from local bakeries, and more, as well as all of your favorite pantry staples. Best part is, Pine Melon offers same-day delivery to Denver and soon Boulder within a two-hour window, no subscription necessary. Save time in your busy schedule and get fresh and healthy groceries delivered right to your door. Join the movement and support local today. Use promo code CITYCASTDENVER for $75 off your first delivery at pinemelon.com. That's pinemelon.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. We're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Bree, how about you? What story's on your mind this week?
Oh, you know, Casa Bonita. But no,
Casa Bonita continues to be a very hot topic.
But it's the intersection of two things we talk about a lot, Casa Bonita and workers' rights, right?
Yeah.
So there was this petition that went out July 12th with a list of demands for Matt Trey and Dana, the two owners, and then Dana Loca Rodriguez, the head chef, who's sort of in the face of it, I think. She's been one of the faces of the reopening as someone that's familiar. People know and trust her in Denver, right?
They're making her more available than they're making Matt and Trey.
Absolutely. When I went to Casa Bonita, she was there talking to tables, walking around for sure. So she is the accessible, which I don't think is necessarily fair that they're putting her out there, but that's between
them. Now that the story's turned a little bit tougher for them, it is putting her in a hard spot.
Yeah,
exactly. And it revolves around her specific expertise, which is running a restaurant.
Yeah.
And that what the workers who sent this petition are upset about is the way that the restaurant part of Casa Bonita is being run.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is putting her in a hard spot.
So the crux of this issue, Denverite's Kevin Beattie sort of sums it up. The restaurant was originally slated to open in May and has languished in an extended, quote, soft open phase, which has limited employee hours. And management also changed employees' pay structures, cutting out all tips and instead opting for hourly wages. So I think those are the two main issues here is pay and schedule, right? And I think if you know anything about an hourly job, the two things your employer should not mess with are your schedule and your pay. So I can see where this has really, really become a struggle. So, like I said, the employees posted this petition putting out a list of demands. This is part of a unionizing effort by some employees. A couple employees have quit. I don't know if we have numbers on how many people left after supposedly they were given this ultimatum to remove tips or leave. Yeah,
still basically pretty murky what's actually happening.
Yeah, and I think that's been the hard part for especially us in the media is like it's murky. We don't know. But what I found interesting was Casa Bonita responded with a statement to this petition last Friday through their PR company, and they sent out their press release Friday at 4:05 p.m.
For people who aren't in the media, what's the meaning of that? Why is that important?
If you send out a press release on a Friday afternoon at 4:05 p.m., you want the story to be buried. You don't want anyone to pick it up. It's where press releases go to die. It's when you release information that you don't necessarily want to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. It's different than, say, if they release this on a Monday morning at 9 a.m., then every media outlet would be covering it.
Yeah. So what do they not want people to be talking about?
So it's kind of what's interesting to me is there's the employee demands in the petition and then the response. They kind of addressed Casa Bonita sort of indirectly addressed some of these issues. So the employees had requested clear opening dates and hours of operation. Again, something us in the media have not seen either. It's pretty unclear if they say they're officially open, but you can't just walk up and get a table.
Yeah, they're still on this email reservation invitation thing.
And it's very unclear how or why you get an email invitation.
Yeah.
Because I know hundreds of people who have signed up for that email list and not very many people have gotten through. So that's one thing is employees are saying, okay, the fact that you aren't telling us when you're opening is messing with our ability to work and make money. And then they also requested a clear pathway of how to access benefits, when to apply for them, et cetera, which makes me wonder if Casa Bonita's got HR. I would think. It seemed a little
Why wouldn't they have? What is this?
Well, because, Paul, we work for an employer and we know exactly when our benefits begin and end. And we get multiple emails about when you sign up for them and how you go about that. And it sounds like they have not been given that information. So to me, that's counter to what Casa Bonita promised, which was benefits for full-time employees. So in response to the hours part, Casa Bonita says, opening well, not fast. So they said they've been intentional about opening gradually in order to sort of refine what they say are the complex aspects of the Casa Bonita experience, which is it's not just a restaurant. We know that. There's an advanced ticketing system now. There's, you know, there's so many places in the restaurant where you can sit. So they have to make sure everything is in line. And they said that they have been transparent with their employees about why they're going so slowly. And they just don't want to make promises to the customers or the staff that they can't fulfill. So
I think the communication problem is the biggest issue here. It's so obvious that these two sides have not been effectively communicating, because when you hear about a last minute change of plans from going from, you know, tipped to non-tipped wages, and then the employees apparently like have less than a day to sign that contract or just get out of there, it reeks of like a lack of a communication to me.
And a little bit of a lack of respect for your employees. I mean, you're setting a precedence as a new restaurant, essentially, right? I know a lot of folks had beef with the old management, and I think they were really looking forward to working for this basically brand new restaurant. And so I think that lack of communication is kind of translating a little bit to a lack of respect for your workforce.
Do you see it from the other perspective at all? What do you see from the managers? What do you think?
I have a hard time seeing it, because it sounds to me like they have not been clear. I think that's all the employees are asking for, is just tell us what's going on so that we can make decisions in our lives. Because again, the precarious nature of being a tipped employee, you're trying to figure out your bills, man. Yeah. You're not salary. You're figuring out your every day your bills. You know what I mean? Your pay situation can look different. And so I just see the frustration, and I don't know. I'm very bummed.
Well, do you give any credence to the manager's points of they want to open well, not quickly? Is that what, was that the quote?
Yes. Yeah.
Because that means inherently there's some uncertainty. So, and they, if we take them at their word that they were being transparent with these new workers who came on, and they said, hey, we don't know how this is going to go. We're going to take a few months to get this right. It's going to be weird. It's going to be irregular. If that was all clear at the beginning, I think these employees signed up for that.
That's not what the employees' testimonials, though, are sharing.
Tell me about those.
So Corey, a bartender there, shared through this petition, "My name is Corey. I originally signed my first offer letter on March 13th. I was told that there would be zero blackout dates, and Casa Bonita would require me to work full time. So I had to quit any other jobs I had by the end of April to ensure my employment with Casa Bonita. Here we are 4 months later with still no sign of an opening date, and I've been living off credit cards and drained my savings." So
it just doesn't seem feasible for very long.
Right. Again, Rachel, a bartender, similar situation. She was very excited to work there. The promises made throughout the hiring and training process were enticing: full-time hours, benefits, and a high rate of pay. Not one of these has been met. She says, even though things are going this way, she thinks there's room for change, and she's really looking forward to continuing to work there.
Oh, she's still optimistic about it. Great to hear.
That's the thing that kind of has been running through. If you look at the petition and you read these testimonials, it's not that people don't want to work there. They're just asking for clarity and just some clarity. What's going on? We need to live, right? I mean, Denver is not a cheap city. You can't be coasting on no job.
Yeah.
So yeah. One more thing I want to address, though, that the employees talked about, which is the tipping issue, right? Mm-hmm,
of course.
So employees request a mutually agreed upon tip pool structure with input from all staff members and full transparency regarding how the mutually agreed upon tip pool will be dispersed. Basically, they're saying, we would like to be tipped. We're fine with putting all our tips together and dispersing them staff wide. We just want to be able to have a say in that process. And Casa Bonita's response, as we know, was, actually, we don't think people are tipping enough, so we're going to go to a flat hourly rate. And what I found interesting about this press release was that Casa Bonita said guests weren't tipping. As a result of our unique customer experience, we found during our soft openings that guests were leaving tips that were much lower than expected. I just want to say, as a person that has been there for the soft opening, it was a little bit confusing if I should tip or how I should tip or what I'm tipping on. So I could see why people weren't tipping. I would not equate that with people don't want to tip.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you're in a beta testing mode,
very
right?
Often when and how to tip. I mean, people are constantly putting iPads in front of you saying the appropriate tip is 35%. What? I don't remember getting an iPad here before saying I should tip my docent at the art museum or whatever.
And the lack of clarity, like you're saying, last week we ordered from a local restaurant. Here we ordered food to go. We paid a service fee. We didn't know that. And then we tipped on top of that. And then they asked us to tip again when we picked up the food. So I think you have a point here, Paul. There needs to be clarity, maybe industry-wide. And we're in the middle of a really messy transition of that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So I can see where Casa Bonita is trying to right the wrong by saying, we think people aren't tipping enough, so we want to make sure our employees are getting a good hourly wage. On the flip side of it, I think one of the big complaints from the employees was just this was a bait and switch.
Yeah.
We know that we take a gamble when we work for tips. However, that gamble often pays off much better than an hourly wage would.
Well, for some people. I don't think for many people. I think that's why the service fees are becoming more popular for restaurateurs. They're more reliable and everybody gets a higher wage in the end. That's the argument for them. Now, it's the bait and switch that I agree is the issue with the Casa Bonita folks. But I'm going to come back to the point of optimism that we shared earlier. Like, it sounds like people are still feeling pretty good about this. You hear about organizing, you hear about unionizing, you hear about tipping, everybody freaks out, and it sounds like the world's going to hell.
Yeah.
But I still believe that this process is going smoothly and we're going to get a better Casa Bonita at the end as a result of it.
I hope that we do, but I hope that better Casa Bonita also ensures a better employee experience.
Well, they're going to have different employees. You know, I think some of the people who took these jobs, like maybe there's some like rock star bartenders who are used to getting like boffo tips on a Friday night.
Also like high volume. We have to think about that, Paul. They were promised this much dinner service, this much lunch service. Like,
they'll get there eventually.
Hundreds of thousands of customers per week, thousands of customers a week, and they're seeing a couple hundred. That I can see why those rock star bartenders are like, whoa, 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 whoa.
It's not the place for them.
But it's also not what I signed up for.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it might not be the place for them, but they should have been able to make that decision before they quit their other jobs.
Well, how does anyone know what it's going to be like? That was the whole we don't know what Casa Bonita 2.0 is like. It turns out the managers didn't either.
I just wish that people thought more about the day-to-day of people's experience of living in the city without having an uncertainty around getting paid at all.
Yeah, that part is really hard to read about.
That's the disconcerting part. So, but at the end of the day, they're still hiring. They have 339 positions open.
Get in the middle of this.
You want to get right in the middle of it. But also the employees are currently working on unionization efforts, which we've been seeing across industries here in Colorado. I also think that that's a bright spot, as much as it's a point of turmoil right now. Worker power, watching folks unionize in spaces like restaurants, I think is really incredible. And I hope that that leads to a better future for Denver in terms of people making enough money to live here.
Yeah.
That's what I want to see. And yeah. I want to see an awesome Casa Bonita.
That's what it's going to all come down to. Can the business really take off and succeed and lead to people having the opportunity to have those livelihoods you're talking about?
I hope so.
We've got a segment here. Every Tuesday, we answer some of your questions or respond to some of your feedback on past topics. And I don't know about you, Bree, but it's always my favorite part of the show.
Our listeners
are so brilliant and hilarious. This response came to us via email. It's from Anata W. Anata writes, I drove downtown yesterday to meet my partner for lunch near Union Station. I had to circle 5 blocks before I could find a parking spot, driving past hundreds of people who were downtown to hang out, grab lunch, or walk back to their offices. I understand that people have not returned to downtown to the level of how things were before the pandemic. I am one of those people who used to work in an office building downtown and now work from home. But to say things like, quote, nobody is going downtown, or quote, downtown is dead, I think is misrepresenting the truth and not helping our city. Please don't help perpetuate these tropes by repeating them on your show when they really aren't true. Go hang out by Union Station on a sunny afternoon. The vibes are great. Thanks, Anata.
Pretty brutal, though.
Yeah. Strong words.
I want to take issue with one thing here. I would agree to a certain extent, right? We have been downtown. We've been at the 5280 offices, which are right in the heart. You can see Union Station.
Yeah.
From the offices, it's awesome. And we go to lunch every Thursday. We've been to Little Finch. Sophia's is our new favorite spot. It's definitely banging. It's not as busy as I've seen downtown, but it's definitely busy. So she has a point. But something else she says in this comment is, I am one of those people who used to work in an office building downtown and now work from home. Paul, what is the state of the office building that we are in?
Underutilized.
There's no one on our floor.
Yeah.
There's literally 2 offices that look like still lifes. I've peeked into them. There's like desks all set up and there is not a human in sight. Even in our office, there's less than a dozen people there usually. And there's, I don't know, 50 to 100 desks.
Yeah.
So that is, I think, the point we're making is it's still not there. And I think also recently when we've talked about this, we've talked about underutilized office buildings. What else do we do with them? Because Inada has a point. There's incredible stuff happening. It's still attracting people downtown. But I also think that there's room for more people.
To me, this is, I feel like this is a check-in for us on how we talk about downtown. Because like we haven't really talked about it since we moved down to 5280. I mean, we talked about the vacant office buildings, but you personally, like, how are you feeling? Do you feel like downtown is dead? Does that resonate? Because that's, you know, those are things we've said on the show in the past.
In the past, for sure. No, I think it's half full, it feels like. It definitely still feels like going downtown on a holiday when the office workers aren't there.
Mm.
That buzz and that busyness, it does not feel the same. It doesn't mean that it's dead. I agree. I totally agree with Inada. It's not dead, but it feels like Denver like 30 years ago. There's just not that many people. So I just think that I agree. We could maybe be a little bit more attentive to how we discuss it, but it's not the same. And I think it would be foolish for us to promote something that's not realistic.
Yeah. And though that change is having a huge economic impact that we need to be mindful of.
100%. 100%. Because even parking garages aren't really full unless it's a Rockies game. Like, things that used to be are just not the same.
Yeah.
But thanks, Inada. That was a great perspective. We really appreciate it.
Thoughtful comment. Appreciate you writing in, Inada. So here we are at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Normally, this is where we pose a question to our listeners for the week. But I wanted to end with something a little bit different. This is a song that we heard thanks to our pal, Emily Ferguson, the arts editor at Westword. Just a really nice track from a local singer-songwriter, Marty Jones. It's an homage to a local legend on the occasion of his retirement. And I think that's all I'm going to say.
I had a free place with plenty of space, close to some good bars and dives, stray load of friends and mice without a good spot to spend a few lives. Now I feel like I'm losing the fire, and they say it's time I retire. So long to the crowds and the crack of the bat, I'm Smokey the Coors Field cat. A big ballpark in daylight and dark, all the outfield a man could roam. Thousands of seats, views you can't beat. Now I'm off to a yard of my own. To my followers out there on Twitter, I'm struggling using the litter. Enjoy your peanuts and your Cracker Jacks. I'm Smokey, a Coors Field cat. Well, it's tough to stack wins in the air this thin, and it sounds like catty bitching. We'd have made more playoffs if only the boss would have spent good money on pitching. I've had a great run of baseball fun and love my time in the sun. But for health reasons, it's my last season. My stint in the big leagues is done. From Blackmon to Arenado, all the players and fans in Colorado, I bid you meow with the tip of my cap. From Smokey, the Coors Field cat. Like a home run, I'm gone and I ain't coming back. I'm Smokey, the Coors Field cat.
That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed the show, why not take a minute to tell your cat about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter, Hey Denver, by texting Denver to 66866. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See you later. Barbie Girl's a great song, but the rest of the album is pretty much certified bangers top to bottom. I will say that.